Please remain standing as we hear these words from the Gospel according to Luke, taken from the 18th chapter and beginning in the 9th verse. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted. Hear what the Spirit is saying. You may be seated.
O God, your name is excellent. Your glory shines throughout all that is, and we come before you with gratitude in our hearts for this time to be together and to reflect upon your word and to be reminded of your love and of your grace. In these moments, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O God, for you and you alone are my strength. You alone are the hope of the whole world. Amen. One day, a man walked into the pastor's study and said that he felt compelled to confess a sin that was newly on his heart. He told the pastor, every week when I come into the church, I find myself looking around at the other men in the congregation and recognizing that I am the best looking guy here. He said, no other man comes close to what I got going on. Pastor, what do I do? What do I do about this sin? And the pastor said, John, that's not a sin. That's just untrue. The names have been changed to protect the identity of the... Paybacks are going to be rough on that one. Okay. We spend a lot of time, consciously or unconsciously, looking around at other people and comparing ourselves to them. Inevitably, we end up on a particular rung of our self-created ladder of human value, somewhere between those whom we resent or admire because we perceive them as smarter or better looking or wealthier than we, and those whom we ridicule or pity because we perceive them as less attractive or less clever, less advantaged than we might be. For some of us, the comparisons may happen more about things like the folks that we perceive to be more organized than we are, or more stylish than we are, or more socially comfortable or outgoing than we are, or more together than we are. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, well, I never think any of that. I don't do that. Not me. And that may be true for some. But I tend to believe that to compare and contrast, a thing that we learn very early in school, how to compare and contrast, is something that we grapple with in human life. No matter who we are, at some level, we grapple with this ambiguous mixture of resentment and admiration, of ridicule and pity. As we seek to make sense of our own existence as human beings, to strive to find our way, to feel okay about who we are and about our lives, we learn to look at other people and to see how we size up. How am I doing at this thing called being human? The result of this is that we spend an awful lot of energy trying to prove ourselves, trying to figure out what to do in order to measure up. Some of us may be conscious of trying to be as good as our colleagues or of our friends. Some of us here today will know good and well how hard you are trying to prove yourself to your parents on all sorts of levels. Maybe some of us are consciously or unconsciously trying to prove ourselves to God. If I can just figure out the right thing to do, the right path, the right ministry, the right way, then God will love me. Then God will love me. Then I will be acceptable. Then I'll be able to trust that I'm good enough. I'm quite certain that I spent more of my time in my younger life on that loop than I needed to. Today, Jesus tells a story. He tells a parable. It involves two folks who go into the temple to pray. The Pharisee has done all the right things. He looks around the community in which he lives and he gives thanks that he is able to serve and give and study and to practice the spiritual disciplines. This guy has the privilege of being able to do all those things and he gives thanks. And as he compares himself to others, he knows that he has done not only what he ought to do, but that he's gone above and beyond the letter of the law. Because if you know what the law says, then you'll notice that this Pharisee says that he fasts twice a week. And that was an observance practiced by some Pharisees in private, in addition to the public days of fasting required in the law of Moses. This practice was considered, you see, to have extra merit because it was voluntary. He had gone above and beyond. He had not only observed the rules, but done extra, the unwritten rules of the church. Now the other person, the tax collector, has likely betrayed his country by collecting those taxes for the enemy, and is presumably a corrupt individual, as many of them were, gaining wealth at the expense of any ethical righteousness. He stands far off from the center of religious life, uttering only some simple, uneloquent words. To be justified is to be in right relationship with God. That's what that word means in church speak. To be justified is to be in right relationship with God. And the Pharisee walks away from the temple believing that he has accomplished this, that he has been justified. But he walks away empty. The tax collector is the one who leaves in right relationship with God. That's what the gospel says. Now, parables, by the way, can be of two types. Some are clearly example stories. They explain something that we are to imitate, like the persistent widow. Go be persistent. Be persistent. That's kind of the point. Other parables are not urging us to do anything, but rather are a kind of picture, an image of God or of the kingdom. These kinds of parables are not examples of a way for us to behave, but they are depictions and pictures of the way God behaves. In the parable we hear today, God is the one who's really doing something. It is God who justifies the bad guy and sends the good guy away empty. This tells us something about the way God behaves. Now, it's hard, I imagine, for many of us to accept this story as it is, because it doesn't really seem fair if you just look at the facts. It's hard. Now, it's hard for some of us to accept the story as it is, because some of us may tend to want to hoard and control God's behavior, God's forgiveness, or God's justification. Who here hasn't struggled with this question? Does the person who ignores God and lives her whole life in selfish, destructive ways, and then at the very end of her life asks for forgiveness and receives it from God, how is that fair when she should be forgiven when I have tried all my life to follow the rules and do the right thing and be a good girl and do what the church said and show up in church and serve the poor and all of the, how is that fair? I mean, maybe you've never thought about that. I don't know. And then there's, of course, an even more pointed and striking question. Will God forgive the one who has abused me? Will God forgive the one who has enslaved and tortured others? Or the now classic, will God forgive Hitler? Those kinds of questions may make us recoil, but they bring the point to searing clarity. We don't know what God will do. As much as we want, perhaps, to decide who is deserving of God's justification, we aren't in control of such things. And perhaps that's part of what we need to hear most. The parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector can easily be tidied up using our human scales and comparison charts. As we read it today, we can compare and contrast, saying, oh, the Pharisee is really the bad guy, boastful and judgmental. And the tax collector is really the good guy, the hero, acknowledging his sin in righteous humility. Now, to read the story that way allows us to say to ourselves, God, I thank you that I am not like the Pharisee in this story. It also allows us to organize God's mercy and God's justification based on merit. That is, the Pharisee and the tax collector, in that way of thinking, they each got what they deserved. They got what they had earned. And as much as we might like it, because that makes sense to us, I don't think that's what's going on or is the point of this story. As Bishop Will Willimon said about this parable, the message can't be, all right, people, get out there and be humble. Because, well, first of all, this is just me speaking. Have you ever tried to be humble? Look how humble I'm being now. Wasn't I really humble there? Let me think about that. That was a very humble thing to do. Go me. The message can't be, all right, people, get out there and be humbled. The primary reason that that's not the message is that that would be the conventional story we already know, the story about getting our lives all cleaned up on our own, about striving to prove ourselves to God, trying to earn our justification. The story is about humility, a word that's related to our word humus, earth, and earthy. And to be humble, is to be close to the ground, to know who you are and where you've come from, to know what you are and what you're not, who you are and who you're not. It's also to be in that place where we've been brought low, where we recognize perhaps that we don't know what to do, that we don't know how to be, that we can't fix what we want to fix, not others and not even ourselves. And at those points, we realize in a very hard earth, concrete way our limits as human beings, that we can't do, we can't earn, we can't prove, we have a limit. And those moments teach us, if we let them, that we're always in that place of humility, whether we're paying attention and naming it or not. The good news in all of this is that God meets us at that limit. What we learn about God today in this parable is that when we are at the limit, when we hit rock bottom, when we are humbled, God draws near. We learn that nothing, not even all our good works and acts of kindness, can earn God's grace. One of the things that's so appealing and at the same time so appalling to us is that the gospel of Jesus Christ is for the humble. And it's appalling because it means that God draws near not only to us at our worst, but to those whom we might be apt to judge as lazy or distasteful or reprobate. It's appalling that the gospel is for the humble because that means that we aren't in control. But it's appealing because it also means that God does draw near to us when we ourselves are down and out, when we are empty-handed or unsteady or unsure or helpless. It's appealing that the gospel is for the humble because it means that God's grace is free. We who strive to do the right things, to be faithful, to be good, to have it all together, may now want to know, well, then what can we do? What is our task? Foundry Church, you all love a task. And I can give you at least one. We can put our self-righteous judgment in check. That's one. But the question of the day is really not about what we're to do. It's not about that. It is instead whether we can come to terms with what we can't do. We can't save ourselves. We can't justify ourselves. We aren't in control of who's in and out. That seems to be where our Pharisee in today's gospel really missed the boat. We can't control God's grace and mercy. We don't get to decide who is loved and forgiven by God. If they're in or out, or we're in or out, we can't be God. The glory is God's whether we like it or not. Today, all we really get is this promise that God's interest in you is unearned. Who ever heard of unearned interest? Anyone who's ever heard the gospel. When you are brought low and hit rock bottom, when you come face to face with the limits of being a human being, when you feel most alone and wounded, when you haven't got the first clue about what to do or how to act or how you're going to get it all done, then God will be there. And that is called grace, unmerited, free grace. And when you are humbled, and if you aren't today, then at some point in your life, trust me, you will be. then let your prayer emerge, not about what you have done so as to try to prove yourself, or what you want God to do so as to try to control the situation. Instead, let your prayer pour forth speech that reflects the nature of the one who has drawn near to you, and simply say, God, be God. God, be merciful. And from that place of humility, open your hands and your heart and allow God to love you in spite of it all. You might just find that love releases you from any need to compare or contrast. May it be so. Amen.